Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, January 26, 1964, Margaret Chase Smith announced her bid for the Republican nomination. It actually happened on January 27th, but as you know, we fudge it a little bit on this podcast from time to time. If you want to be really strict about the dates, go find some other historical podcast. But anyway, January 26th, 1964, Margaret Chase Smith announces that she's going to run for the GOP nomination. We have talked a little bit on this show about JFK being the first Catholic to be elected president, breaking a religious barrier of sorts. Margaret Chase Smith actually cited that in her speech as she tried to break the barrier and become the first woman placed into nomination by a major party, which she did. She made it all the way to the convention and was placed into nomination. She was also eminently qualified to run for president. She had been in Congress as a representative from Maine for over 20 years, longer than any of the other men running for the GOP nomination that year. So my sense is that when people list trailblazing female politicians, Margaret Chase Smith's name doesn't maybe come up right away, but she is a very fascinating character. We're going to talk about her now and her 1964 run with, as always, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson. Hello, Kelly.
Hey there.
So, Nikki, paint the sketch of this 1964 run, and then we'll talk about Margaret Chase Smith in general. But why does she jump into this race in this moment?
1964 is such an interesting year because we talk about that election a lot because it's the face-off between Barry Goldwater and Lyndon B. Johnson. And so Margaret Chase Smith kind of gets forgotten. But as you were saying, she was someone who had served, the first woman actually, to have served in both the House and the Senate. She'd been there since 1940. And in 1964, she throws her hat in the ring. She says, you know, Kennedy showed that Catholics could do this. I'm going to show that women can do this. And she was pretty upfront with the fact that the prospects were not good for her to win the Republican nomination. She didn't have a big group of, she didn't have a huge campaign staff. She didn't have any money. She didn't really want any money. But what she wanted to do was she wanted to be the first. She believed that if the first woman made a bid for the presidential nomination, that many, many women would follow. I'm not sure that exactly panned out the way that she thought, but I think that it was important to understand that that's how she saw her candidacy, as a barrier-breaking moment.
I think that oftentimes we sometimes want to dismiss women that are making these symbolic political runs. But I think in some ways we can say that she opened up the space for Shirley Chisholm, who does take a serious run at the presidential campaign in 1972. And so, you know, these moments that we sometimes think are inconsequential, I think we can pay them forward into the future and see the ways that they can play out, or at the very least prepare people to think about what it might look like, feel like, to have a woman in the highest office in the country.
Yeah. And just to paint the picture of, because sometimes when you talk about firsts, it can be a little complicated. So as I see it, right, we have done an episode about Shirley Chisholm before, and she was a first, I mean, obviously a black woman, but also she was the first woman who won a primary. Margaret Chase Smith did not win any primary. She got 25% of the vote in Illinois, but as Nikki said, you know, she didn't really, but she was the first to stay all the way through the convention. And then at the convention, she actually, I think, has a little bit of a showdown with Goldwater and refuses to release her support to Goldwater. And so she ends up entering the formal nomination, and that's her first. Trailblazing is not a zero-sum game. Everyone gets to hold that mantle here, but just to clarify a little bit. But Nikki, you know, there is that showdown with Goldwater at the 64 convention. What does that tell us about her politics and her place within the GOP of the early to mid-60s?
So she and Barry Goldwater were in the Senate together, and Goldwater was a staunch conservative, a rock-ribbed conservative, they would call him. And he was the entering wedge for turning the Republican Party into a much more conservative party than it was in 1964. And people like Margaret Chase Smith, who were much more moderate, I mean, she's somebody who voted for the Civil Rights Act. Later in her career, she would vote for the Equal Rights Act. She's somebody who stood up against Joe McCarthy in 1950 when she was still in the House and denounced his red baiting and his attacks on people by suggesting that they were communist. So she was someone who was a bit iconoclastic. She was a moderate, and she was worried about the growing and vitriolic conservatism that was taking root in the GOP. So she wasn't just making a stand as a woman, but she was making a stand for the moderate and liberal wings of the party.
I really like this quote by her where she says, "I don't want to see the Republican Party ride to political victory on the four horsemen of calumny, fear, ignorance, bigotry, and smear." And what I think is really cool is that, you know, she supported increased educational funding, civil rights, Medicare. She voted in favor of the Civil Rights Act in 1957, 60, 64, 68. She also was a huge proponent of the 24th Amendment, which banned the poll tax, and was also a huge supporter of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. She supported the confirmation of Thurgood Marshall to the U.S. Supreme Court, and she's a huge proponent of space. So when we think of the NASA administrator James E. Webb, he once commented that the United States would have never placed a man on the moon had it not been for Smith. So when we think about her as the highest ranking Republican official on the Aerospace Committee, you know, this is a powerful woman who's making huge strides in terms of progressive legislation.
Yeah, it's such a good reminder of how different the Republican Party once looked. Her husband, when he was in the House in the 1930s, supported New Deal legislation. As Kelly was just saying, she supported things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and a lot of the Great Society initiatives. And it's just a reminder that the parties were sorted very differently back then. And it's also a reminder that women from Maine in the Senate have been iconoclasts from the very beginning.
That's true. She seemed like also a little bit of a hawk too, right? She really pushed Kennedy to be a little more aggressive with nuclear weapons negotiations and sort of, you know, having a little more teeth in the threats of using nuclear weapons against the Soviet Union. So, yeah, I think just a really fascinating character.
Yeah, we should actually talk about one of those moments when she stood up against Kennedy. It was after the Berlin crisis in 1961, when Kennedy refused to use nuclear weapons against the Soviet Union. And she goes onto the floor of the Senate and she says, "You have to be more willing to use this kind of weaponry." She says, in short, "We have nuclear capability, but not nuclear credibility, because nobody believes that we're actually going to use these weapons." And Nikita Khrushchev over in the Soviet Union is not happy about these comments. He ends up calling her the devil in disguise of a woman. So she was not a dove, Margaret Chase Smith.
Well, you managed to piss off Kennedy and Khrushchev at the same time. I guess it's quite an accomplishment.
Running the gamut.
So, Nikki, as we start to wrap up, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about legacy, but also just about female politicians within each party. And I mean, the GOP has a really fascinating legacy of women who have achieved high office and run for high office. Obviously, Sarah Palin was on a presidential ticket. A lot of people look to Nikki Haley as possibly someone who's really going to, you know, be in a position to run in the future. So, you know, how, just paint that picture of that legacy of Republicans and Democrats and women politicians within those two parties.
So the Republican Party in the 1940s and the 1950s in many ways was the party of women. It was the party that was defending reproductive rights, for instance. It was the party that was, I think it was the first to support formally the Equal Rights Amendment. So after the feminist movement of the 1970s, things start to change a bit and people start to get confused because they don't separate out women and feminists. So as the Republican Party becomes more and more anti-feminist, people start to be surprised that there are women in the Republican Party. And there are certainly many fewer elected women in the Republican Party, but there are a lot, and a lot who, as you just mentioned, have been very prominent in the Republican Party. And because we're not paying attention to women in the Republican Party, sometimes I think we miss movements like the creation of the PAC Maggie's List, which was actually named after Margaret Chase Smith and was founded in order to raise money for conservative women to be elected to federal office. And so it's fascinating that that both is a project that is happening, but also that Margaret Chase Smith, somebody who wasn't a conservative but was a prominent Republican, is the one who gets it named for that list.
And finally, Kelly, at the very beginning of the show, we talked a little bit about just the power of seeing someone do this. But, you know, I wonder if we can sort of finish on that. We're obviously recording this in the wake of Kamala Harris now becoming vice president. We saw a little bit of an effect in 2018 coming off of 2016 of women saying, "Oh, I can run for office." Margaret Chase Smith, that was a big part of what she got in it for. I mean, how powerful is that, and does it really change our politics?
I think it's incredibly powerful. I think optics matter a lot. The ability to be able to see something and then think that you can also hold that position holds a lot of sway. I think, you know, there are a lot of little girls all across the country who are looking at Kamala Harris right now and thinking, okay, this is something that I can do. But equally important, there are a lot of people who are looking at Joe Biden and saying, this is something I can do too. Not just the vice presidency, but the presidency itself is accessible in ways that it has never really been before. You don't have to necessarily have an Ivy League education. You don't have to be wealthy in order to obtain these high offices. And that matters.
Yeah, I think that's weirdly an under-acknowledged force in 2018. I mean, so many people paint the story of 2018 as pissed off at Donald Trump. But the other part of that was definitely a whole generation of women who just saw Hillary Clinton run in 2016 and say, okay, I'm pissed off at Donald Trump and I can do this. And, you know, that's what led to that election. Okay, before we wrap up, I do want to do one of these also on this day's, just to simply point out that in 1918, this was the day that the U.S. government called for one meatless and two wheatless days a week to conserve food during World War I. So we did an episode recently about changes to meat consumption and meat quality during World War II because of rationing. There was rationing going on in World War I as well. Meatless and wheatless days. I feel like this is the U.S. government inventing the paleo diet or something.
I was just about to say, paleo sad one day, carbs exactly. People sad 2 days.
Yeah. All it took was a war. Okay. We're going to leave it there. Nicole Hammer, thanks to you as always.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
Thanks so much.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. Get in touch with us with any comments about the show or potential topics. thisdaypod@gmail.com is our email. There is also a contact form at thisdaypod.com. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
As gratifying as are the reasons advanced urging me to run, I find the reasons advanced against my running to be far more impelling. For were I to run, it would be under severe limitations with respect to lack of money, lack of organization, and lack of time, plus the very heavy odds against me. So because of these very impelling reasons against my running, I have decided that I shall.
Radiotopia.